Life in Fukuoka.
Life in Fukuoka. Life in Fukuoka. This program is brought to you by Fukuoka City.
Good morning, and thank you for listening to Life in Fukuoka on Love FM with me, Colleen. This program is just a short show to share with you tips on how to live in Fukuoka City more comfortably, as well as give you information from the city and things to do when you're out and about. For all of that, make sure you tune in every Monday morning for Life in Fukuoka in English.
Life in Fukuoka.
All right, well, this week we have invited another guest to join us, and I'd like to introduce you all to Matthew Porter, who is here with me today. So I say I introduce you, but actually, Matthew, if you could introduce yourself, that would be great.
Sure. My name is Matthew Porter, and I moved to Japan in 1999,
okay.
The first time. And I've lived in Fukuoka since 2015.
Okay, so kind of a recent-ish transplant.
Yeah. And I came here to raise a family with my wife. She's originally from Fukuoka, and I moved from Hiroshima, where I lived for 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then what, I mean, you said you came here to raise your kids with your wife, but then are you doing anything here?
Yes, I actually teach nursing English. It's a special subfield of medical English to nursing students at Fukuoka Jogakuin Nursing University.
And how's that going?
Interesting.
Okay, yeah, because it's quite a different field of work.
Yeah, and nursing in Japan is different from other countries. There's certain, like, the law is different, and what nurses can and can't do is really defined and different from, for example, Europe or America or Canada. So it's difficult to find materials that are appropriate. Sometimes, like, the textbooks from overseas have them doing, like, the wrong thing, like something that might be illegal in Japan.
Okay, so you've got to tread upon that quite carefully.
Yeah, and it's really important for me to not to have them speak English perfectly, but to get them more comfortable using any type of English or simple Japanese with a foreign patient, which actually shouldn't be called a foreign patient. It's more of a direct translation from Japanese. Like, it's really a culturally and linguistically diverse patient.
Okay.
So someone whose first language might not be English.
Right.
But who could use enough English to, you know, maybe during a hospital stay, create a good relationship with the nurse and get good care.
All right.
So, yeah, so it's really important for my students to recognize what maybe those patients, maybe their expectations are a little different. In my research, which kind of focuses on the experience of foreign patients, called patients, culturally and linguistically diverse patients in Japan, what I found is, for example, in America, maybe you'd expect a medical health professional to talk to you about touching your body before touching your body.
Right, getting consent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in Japan, that's not always the case. Like, you may be quickly touched, or you may be touched in an unfamiliar way that you may not be completely comfortable with, and an explanation beforehand would be better. And explanation is often lacking. Some of the people I interviewed had really awful experiences where they expected a certain exam or a certain test, and they were given a completely different one that was very invasive. And in the end, they felt, oh, I can't trust the Japanese healthcare system, which is really disappointing as an American.
Right.
Because one of the reasons why I decided to stay in Japan so long was I was really dissatisfied with healthcare in the States, the cost of it. Right. And so paying taxes in Japan, paying into the system, and being able to see any doctor at any time. I mean, there are some limitations to that, but it's definitely more accessible. Healthcare is more accessible. And the more Japanese you speak, the easier it becomes to access that care.
Right.
So going to the hospital is a big deal, I think, for both sides, the hospital side and the patient side, right?
All right.
Yeah.
So then kind of bringing you back to just living in Fukuoka, how have you found raising kids here, and how have you found life in general?
For both questions, it's been interesting because of the time period, really, because 2015, I was getting used to having a at that time, my eldest was 3.
Okay.
So it was, you know, getting her into preschool and what type of preschool to choose, like a completely relaxed one where they don't really focus on a lot of, I don't want to say academics at that age, but learning to read or learning to write a little, you know, learning a little bit of arithmetic or something. And the other side of that is, you know, the really hardcore, like
right.
you're going to go to preschool and you're going, it's going to be like mini juku. And you're going to learn so much.
And you're going to go to university in the next 2 years at five.
Yeah. And we chose a place that was kind of in the middle.
Okay.
And it was interesting to see how much they I don't want to say trained. It's not like Pavlovian responses. But, you know, seeing this group of you know, 4 and 5 year olds playing musical instruments and like percussion and doing a little dance. And it was really cute. And
okay, so you say 4 and 5 year olds. So is your child in an international school or
no.
is it a Japanese, fully Japanese?
It was fully Japanese preschool. And then now she's actually a junior high school. She's
okay.
in first year of junior high. Yeah. So in 2015, you know, we're getting her ready for preschool. And then by the time our second one comes along, we're right into COVID.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And everything changes. Like, I think that changes for everybody.
Right.
Right? Like, what do you do? Now you've got, for 6 months, we really didn't go out. And, you know, for the little one, her preschool created videos and had them on a private YouTube channel. And we could, like, do things with her at home, introduce her to her teachers. And just with that expectation that you'll eventually, you know, we'll all be back, you know, at the, you know, back in normal lives. And on the other side of that, though, my eldest was in elementary school, and we kind of started bad habits where we'd sleep in and then, you know, wake up, do homework, do work, and then at night we'd go stargazing. We'd hear that there'd be like a meteor shower, and we'd go to Kominoyama in, was that Hisayama, I think, or Sasaguri?
Okay.
Suginoyama in Komiyama. There's a tenbodai, there's an observatory at the top
right.
you can go to. And it's beautiful. It overlooks the coastline. You can see Fukuoka Tower, and then you can see the buildings on Island City. And then if the weather's right, you just see, you know, amazing shooting stars from the top of this mountain.
So and kind of as an educator, in a sense, you were, well, educating your children even during COVID, but
yeah,
in a very different way.
In a very different way. It wasn't, you know, let's follow this formal, you know, laid out schedule for us. It's, you know, we've got the freedom now, and what do you want to do? We taught her lots of card games. and yeah, and then and went out at night, and well, went out during the day too, found so many parks throughout Fukuoka. And it was really weird because COVID, you know, it was, you know, don't go outside, don't go outside. But at the same time, if you go outside to a park and there's, you know, amazing distance between people and, you know, what's the harm in going outside and you know, finding these parks and playing?
Would you say you actually discovered a lot more during that time?
Yeah, it gave us so much time and also a car. We decided to buy a car to avoid public transportation. And so we bought a used car and just started to explore and ended up going across the prefecture, you know, go to Yukuhashi. And, you know, there's a wonderful shrine in Yukuhashi that every year has a type of bird that visits called a northern bobok. And it's a type of owl.
Okay.
And it's often found, it kind of looks like Totoro.
Right.
It's often found in shrines, in the giant trees in shrines. And they arrive in Japan around, I think, June is when you start to see them.
Mm.
And then they'll have chicks. And you'll start to see their chicks around, I think, late June or early July. And it's really cool. Like, I know about 6 spots now in Fukuoka where, you know, one in Itoshima, one in Nakagawa. There's one in Kurume.
So it sounds like you're actually the guy to ask if
people
are looking for kind of secret or lesser known locations.
Yeah, if you wanted to go out and kind of explore, if you're interested in temples and shrines and a little bit of nature.
Would
I
you
do
say,
know
though,
places.
Okay, so speaking about you being a dad in Japan, would you say that these kind of places are really good for kids? I mean, do they not get bored?
I think my junior high school daughter is getting bored.
Right.
I mean, she's definitely more interested in music now. And yeah, so she'll sit in the car and read. But it's amazing because she did and still does play along sometimes. So like there's a type of bird called a shijukara, which is a Japanese tit. It's a small bird, kind of black and white and green. It's got a beautiful song. And it's her favorite bird, and she's drawn pictures of it at school. And if we're out and she hears it, she'll be like, that's a shijukara.
Okay.
Yeah, so she'll still play along, but you know, she basically just wants to listen to her music and read her books. And yeah.
So do you think, just, and this is kind of going back, being a non-Japanese person, I guess, do you think being a dad here is different for you than it is for, like, your average Japanese Joe?
I used to, at academic conferences, when I got to meet teachers who were teaching Japanese as a second language, it was just as I was becoming a new father, and I found that I had problems, like, communicating, because I didn't really know. I had no practice activities leading to speaking Japanese with my own children. And so it just felt like, rather than having, like, friendly conversations with my kids, like, oh, what's up? How's it going? You know, like in English, like, what's up, sport? You know, like, nothing like that. It's just like, did you do your homework?
Right.
Do your homework, you know? And so I remember this one professor of Japanese who I'd met, and we started talking about that, how just in real life, there's no scenario that you practice in school to get you ready for parenting in a second language. And yeah, I kind of wonder if my children spoke English more, like what kind of relationship we would have. But pretty much in my house, it's Japanese. So,
okay. So, I mean, for a lot of the, I guess, dads out there in Fukuoka, what would be your advice, just in general, raising kids here?
Oh, wow. I think every neighborhood's different.
Okay.
Like, I remember when I was first in Japan decades ago, and you'd have international marriages, and, you know, a child would be born, and immediately the people not raised in Japan would say, you know, she's going to be bullied. You know, people are going to point out the fact that she's not 100% Japanese, and this is going to be bad. And, you know, gradually over 20 years, you know, I've seen that change, and Japan has definitely become more diverse and more accepting of what it means to be Japanese, perhaps.
Right.
And so in the neighborhood we live in, I've never experienced anything really like that, where my children were... They never came home saying, oh, somebody pointed out the fact that I wasn't Japanese because you're not Japanese.
Mm-mm.
Like, sometimes, I mean, young children, like, you know, early elementary school. I went to a parent-teacher conference day last week, and the boys sitting around my daughter, so this is a second grade class, as I was checking her math work, under the teacher's direction, she had asked all the parents in the room to check the math. And the boys kept on looking at me, and in Japanese asking, are you Japanese? Are you a foreigner? Can you speak Japanese?
Okay.
Do you speak English? And I just, to be honest, I just kind of ignored them, because I think it was supposed to be time for me and my daughter. It wasn't time for me to turn on and
right.
be like, oh, hey, I'm the English teacher, and yeah.
But then they're kind of asking if you're Japanese as well, so I wonder if they're not seeing people in the same way. Like, you could be Japanese for all they know.
Yeah, which would be nice. It'd be a nice change. You
okay.
know? Yeah. Because, you know, I remember 20 years ago, I'm sure you've had this experience too, you know, walking down the street and you look a little different, and suddenly you pass junior high school kids or elementary kids, and they're like, hi, hi,
right.
and they just start yelling, you know, English at you. And
for that English practice chance, but yeah.
And at that time, it made me uncomfortable, because I mean, what about me makes you think that I speak English? I could speak German, I could speak Russian, I could speak French. You know, it's not really, that's not a really good, in terms of, I think at that time, what was I think internationalization was the key word back then. And yeah, internationalization, I think, would have not been just yelling hi at you know, foreign looking people. It would have been, hi, where are you from?
Right,
you know,
right.
in Japanese first, you know, and oh, this person needs to speak Japanese. Oh. You know, now I'm having a conversation with you know, maybe it's a foreigner. Oh,
right.
So you're from America. That's great. And then you can speak English after that if you want, you know. But, you know, to interact first as someone who's living in Japan, the default should, the interaction should be Japanese. It's the most, to me, the most respectful, the most polite.
Fair enough. So, and I guess, I mean, but like you mentioned, you have actually seen this starting to change quite a lot in these last 20 years.
Yeah, definitely. I think just the sheer number of people, you know, the increase in foreign population and in foreign tourists, it's definitely not back in Himeji, which was the first place I lived, I was one of two foreign people who lived in the city. And all the grandparents knew what I was
right.
eating. Right. They knew exactly what I bought at the supermarket. So,
Fukuoka is quite a different place. Yeah.
Completely different. I don't think anybody cares, really. You know. And actually, you know, talking about culture, I think one of the things that I really like about Japan, what makes me feel comfortable in Japan, is most people just leave you alone. Like, you really just don't bother each other. And so, I mean, we can extend this to certain topics that I think are more controversial abroad. You just don't really ask about it. You don't talk about it. You just let people be who they are.
Yeah.
And as long as you're not, like, causing problems for the people around you, like, the tolerance level, the acceptance level, tolerance and acceptance are a bit different, but the tolerance level seems just a lot higher for things here, as long as you're not, you know, really upsetting things. But on the other hand, sometimes it can be really hard to change things because you notice in the system, maybe this should be a little different. Maybe at work you think, oh, this should be a little different, but nobody wants to take risks and, you know, let's not explore that. No, we just can't do that because we've done that this way the entire time. So it's interesting.
It is. Yeah. It is. And thank you. It's quite a different interview than we usually have with a lot of people. But I think it's just a different viewpoint, which is really nice to have. And thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you to everyone for listening today. I hope you have a chance to look at the podcast, or rather listen to the podcast. You'll be able to hear everything and also check out some of the links that Matthew has shared, and you can see what he's all about. So thank you again.
Life in Fukuoka. All right. Thank you for listening to Life in Fukuoka today. I had a lot of information to share, and there is that phone number that you might like to hear again, which you can if you listen to this program's podcast, or you can check out the blog and the contents of this program to get that information. Just go to the Love FM website and look up this program's page. We're also asking for messages from our listeners. Any message is great. Let us know what you think about the show or things you've discovered in Fukuoka. The email address to send to is 761@lovefm.co.jp. Again, that is 761@lovefm.co.jp. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Have a great day, and I will speak to you again next week.